How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can often check Channel 92 as well, and the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone will bring up Sports Byline USA. And the Sirius Satellite Radio app will also bring you this show every Sunday afternoon. We got so much stuff to talk about here today. It's a scorching, sweltering hot day here in Seattle. That means about 85 degrees. And I'm sure much, much hotter elsewhere, perhaps even where Mike is at. And in Las Vegas, 117 degrees today. We are heading down to Vegas starting on Thursday for our annual Figure Four Online / Wrestling Observer Convention, which is in association with the UFC's biggest show of the year, or at least that's what they're hoping to eventually make the July 4th weekend all about, their version of WrestleMania. It's Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman in the main event. We'll talk about that here on the show today. And also in Las Vegas, the UFC Fan Expo. You can check that out. And they'll be there all 3 days as well. A lot of stuff going on in Vegas. The good news is it'll only be 108 degrees when we're down there in Vegas. So looks like next week the show will probably be from Las Vegas, this Wrestling Observer Live. And we'll talk about the UFC show. We'll talk about WWE on this program here today, including what's going on with Daniel Bryan leading into what will likely be a world title match, WWE title match, actually, at the SummerSlam pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw and SmackDown. Also, some notes on the death of Matt Bourne, the original Doink the Clown, Matt Osborne, as well as the death of Jackie Fargo, legend, perhaps the most legendary star in the history of Memphis wrestling, the man who gave Jerry the King Lawler his start in this business, the WWE Performance Training Center, Fightmaster, and what is up with the ROH champion, Jay Briscoe, and his brother. So much stuff to talk about on the show today. We're going to kick it up when we come back from the break. So much stuff to talk about, so hold that dial. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer. You can also check us out on the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone. There is literally no way you can't listen to this show. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about in this hour today, so let's get right into it. Mike, how's the weather out there?
It's very warm. It's very humid here on the East Coast. It's not 112 degrees warm, though, which I'm happy about that.
You live in Delaware. That's the rumor.
That's true.
That's confirmed?
Yes, myself and J.J. Dillon.
And Jay Briscoe.
The entire Briscoe clan, as everybody saw on ROH TV last week.
Let me ask you a question, Mike. We're going to kick this off here talking about the Briscoe brothers. Jay Briscoe and his brother are, at this moment, not under contract to Ring of Honor Wrestling. Jay is the champion. And they may be back. I actually am pretty sure they'll be back. I don't know for certain, obviously. But their contract's expired, and they have a period where, if they want to, they can try to negotiate with WWE, see if they can get a job there. And if they can, I'm sure they'll be off on their merry way going to WWE. And if not, well, they'll probably be back in Ring of Honor. And who knows? Maybe Jay will even come back defending the ROH title. Perhaps not. Perhaps they'll strip him of the belt. A lot of different options. Now, Mike, before we get into discussing what's going on with the Briscoes, as you noted on ROH television last week, they did a special on the Briscoes, a Briscoe Brothers one-hour television special. And they mentioned, I don't even know why, of every aspect of the story, I'm not sure why this is the one that I must ask you about first, but I can't help myself. They obviously are chicken farmers. And they said on the program that their father Papa Briscoe is, I believe the exact words, a big shot in the chicken world. I think that's the term they used. I don't know much about the chicken world. I don't know much about the chicken farm there in Delaware. But can you confirm or deny Papa Briscoe being a big shot in the chicken world?
I can't say that they're how big of a shot that he is, but with all that land that they have, I'm sure they're tied in with someone, whether it be Purdue or whether it be another company that they're Tyson or somebody like that that they're farming for. And when you get as much land as many chickens as they have, yes, I believe you do become at least a relatively big deal. And Sussex County, Delaware, is not a large place on the planet, so I would say probably where they are, yeah, that they're relatively a big deal where they are, I would assume.
Now, when it was announced that Jay and Mark were no longer under contract and Jay had not dropped the title, there was a great deal of outrage amongst the ROH fan base. How could ROH be so stupid, I heard people say. Why did they not take the title off of Jay? People freaking out left and right. My feeling is the best bet is to just, why don't we all chill out and wait and see? Because there's a good chance they're going to be back. Probably a very good chance, in my opinion. And what are your thoughts on this whole situation, how it's been handled so far?
I'm under the assumption that there's more moving parts than probably the layman would believe in all of this. And I think that there was either a plan in place or there probably still is a plan. That people just need to sit back and watch for. It's with the people involved, it's hard to believe that they're not going to be back, considering they did not drop the titles. Although I guess it's, you know, we can see, obviously, that Jay had a tweet that he deeply regrets not long ago, and that is going to, no matter where he goes or where they look, that could come back and bite them in the rear end as far as, you know, shopping themselves around in this downtime without the ROH contract. But still, I don't, again, there just seems to be, as you said, you know, probably everybody should take a wait-and-see attitude on this because, again, I'm under the assumption with how things went that there's probably more moving parts than this, and it wouldn't be, I just can't fathom that Ring of Honor just, you know, it's not like something they missed with them, you know, with the contracts running out and he continues to be the champion. Again, I'm giving them credit in they know a little more of what's going on or what plan they have than what's out there.
Well, I wrote a lot about this in the newsletter this week, and I could tell everybody that this was not something that caught everybody off guard. It's been known for a long time that the Briscoe's deals were coming due. Not a surprise. And the tweet where basically he said that if anybody wanted to teach his son that gay marriage was okay, he would shoot them. It's pretty much what the tweet said. That was a big issue immediately upon tweeting. But once the decision was made that he was going to donate two purses, so to speak, his payment for two events to charity, and also issue a public apology, it was water under the bridge and no longer a big issue within ROH. So it wasn't a situation where, as originally reported in some places, this tweet was the result of all of this happening. Sinclair found out about the tweet 2 months after it happened or whatever the story was, and it was nothing like that. The tweets had nothing to do with what is going on. And it's kind of hard to believe that Sinclair would be upset with the Briscoes, given they gave them a one-hour TV special in place of ROH TV on Sinclair this past week. The officials at Sinclair absolutely love the Briscoes. The Briscoes are on good terms with everybody in the company. And whatever is happening is going according to whatever the plan was that they had. There's a lot of long-term planning in ROH. And sometimes small things happen here, small things happen there, and little changes are made. But the overall overarching direction largely always remains the same. And Jay Briscoe not dropping the title when his contract expires. This is not an oversight. This is not a situation where it's a small thing that has been overlooked. This is what they saw coming, and obviously they had an idea. And I guess we'll see where it goes. But Jay and Mark currently gone, may very well be back. Maybe they'll sign with WWE. As noted, there's no heat with Sinclair regarding these tweets, but I can very easily see a situation where WWE got cold feet on the Briscoes as a result of these tweets. And if feet don't warm up over the next month or so, then the guys may end up coming back to Ring of Honor, and who knows what the status will be of the title. But certainly them, is it Pew Boys? Is that how you pronounce it? They got themselves in some trouble.
Yeah, and it's and like you said, it doesn't affect their status with Ring of Honor. Wouldn't it affect their status, really, I don't believe, with any other group out there, with the exception of the group that they would want to be signed by, in theory at least, and that's taking their shot at WWE, where it is going to come up. And it's, you know, there's always going to be somebody up there who does bring this up if they do ever get signed. You know, it's unfortunate the Ring of Honor had the weekend that it did last week in Baltimore with problems with the iPay-per-view, because this came, obviously, the problems during the match, the main event between those Pew Boys, didn't make people happy. And it would just, you know, this news coming out after, it didn't look good for Ring of Honor. But, again, they're two separate issues when it comes to the product as far as being delivered on iPay-per-view, and then the status of these contracts and the status of the Briscoe Boys, which I have a feeling a lot of people just lumped together and piled them together after the rough weekend that ROH had last weekend.
Now, they are no longer doing live iPay-per-views. They had issues yet again. I talked to several people about this, and literally every single one of them, I believe, said it's just not worth it. They're going to be going to taped iPay-per-views, maybe on a few-hour delay, probably just airing them the next day. So if you want to see the show, it's going to be perfect because they won't be streaming it live. And obviously, they're going to be losing out on some iPay-per-view buys as a result of this. But they are going to be also completely eliminating, hopefully, a ton of the negative feedback they've been getting due to the iPay-per-view problems. So we'll get Mike's opinion on the idea of dropping these iPay-per-views after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. If you got a smartphone, check us out on the TuneIn Radio app, Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer, or check us out on the Sirius Satellite Radio app as well. And before the break, we're talking ROH, decision to drop live iPay-per-views and move to a taped iPay-per-view format to eliminate the live streaming issues that have plagued the company. The main reason being it's not worth the hassle. The negativity that surrounded poorly produced iPay-per-views was more than the trouble, more than the expense, in their opinion, of putting out those pay-per-views. They're making probably, I don't know, $12,000 to $15,000 on a good iPay-per-view. And if the iPay-per-view did not go off flawlessly, then they were bombarded with negativity. And the feeling is, let's just get rid of the negativity. If you want to see the show, wait a few hours, 4 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, whatever. It'll be online. It'll be perfect. Nobody has to worry about it. And word of mouth will hopefully prop these things up. What are your thoughts on the dropping of the live iPay-per-view concept, Mike?
Yeah, I think it stinks. I really do. I don't. Maybe this doesn't affect them in a dramatic way with what they're getting right now as far as buys go. I don't know that. I would assume it's disappointing. It really is. When you think back to like the Briscoes against the Kings of Wrestling, the whole build up for that, and a lot of the other stuff in the past. I mean, people were fired up to order those iPay-per-views, and over time they've had issues with seemingly every single one of them in the past, you know, however many that they've had. And I understand their thinking of, well, we'll just wait a couple hours, we'll put it up there, it does eliminate the negativity from people having issues with the stream. But New Japan cranks out live pay-per-views on Ustream, and there doesn't seem to be a problem at all. Obviously, you know, Evolve's had their issues, and Dragon Gate's had their issues, but with the amount of stuff that's aired on that WWNLive.com network, again, they don't even reach to the problems that Ring of Honor has, and Ring of Honor is owned by Sinclair Broadcasting. And it's again, they're a television, you know, station holding group that produces its own local news, that produces some of its other, you know, own programming, and why they can't kick out the money and why they can't kick out the technology of what's needed to take care of their vanity company, or however you want to look at it, their original television programming. They don't, that's beyond me. That really is absolutely beyond me, and I have sympathy for them as far as it being a live pay-per-view with moving parts. You're going to have problems when you go to buildings and such, but you rent the building that you can have the best stream and that can handle having an internet pay-per-view. You get the people in there involved who can actually get this thing together and get it off without hitches. I mean, it's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous at this point that they have to cancel pay-per-views when we're seeing so many. I didn't get a chance to see the one from last night, but even the Colognes in Puerto Rico are cranked out an pay-per-view. Again, this may not matter. The hardcore ROH fans, they're going to buy it regardless. If their next show is a knockdown, drag-out, you know, must-see show, you know, that buzz is going to get to everybody and people are going to be all over it. But what they're also going to be all over is if they have a bad show and people just won't order the replay, because that word gets out fast. Is this something I need to skip? So some of the special, you know, nature of the pay-per-views are going to be lost right there, and there's going to be people who don't even bother because it is a taped pay-per-view, and there's a segment of those people already that, you know, if it's taped, I don't watch it. If it's live, it's something special, I watch it. So it's very disappointing, and it's too bad that they've had to do this. It's probably the best idea for them. Obviously, for them, it is the best idea to try to eliminate the cost and eliminate the headaches that come from this. Just from a fan point of view and a, you know, just a pure sit back and kind of, you know, survey the scene, it's rather depressing and rather odd that a TV company that owns a vanity project like this won't put the effort and the time behind it to actually prop it up and make sure that their pay-per-views actually work.
Seeing the feeling now in ROH is that now that they are owned by Sinclair, they're a television property. And it's good to build for big events, and they're still going to on pay-per-view. But at the end of the day, to stay alive, they have to provide programming for Sinclair. It's got to be programming that people watch. It's got to be programming that sponsors pay money to sponsor. And that's it. You know, there was a day, I remember back in the mid-90s, when WCW was absolutely decimating their pay-per-view business. And they in decimating their pay-per-view business, decimated their entire business, because so much of their business was reliant on pay-per-view. And I can remember with WWE, I can remember in the early 2000s, I believe it was, when we started looking through the financial reports, and we discovered that, oh my God, they are now almost making as much for television as they're making for on their pay-per-views. And then obviously the day came where they got their new deal to jump to USA, and then eventually, actually first it was to Spike, and then eventually back to USA. And you started seeing those numbers, and pretty soon it was, they're making way more for television than they're making for pay-per-view. And suddenly the idea of pay-per-view being the be-all and end-all, that wasn't the case anymore. They were a television company more than they were a pay-per-view company. And it's the same thing with ROH. Obviously, it would be ideal to be running live pay-per-views. But at the end of the day, there's a reason the Steel Cage Warfare show is going to be on Sinclair and not on pay-per-view. They're moving towards television. They're television content providers. They're going to provide big matches on television. They're going to try to provide premium content on television. And yes, there will still be pay-per-views. Yes, they will still build to big shows. But to stay alive, they've got to provide for Sinclair. That is number one. That is the be-all, end-all. And they're trying to keep things positive by eliminating all of the negativity that is built into those screwed-up pay-per-views. So that's the feeling, and we'll see how that pays off over the next several months.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good feeling to have at least, and that, you know, they are original programming for Sinclair to put out there, and Sinclair's actually buying a couple stations on the West Coast, or that's in the process of being cleared through the FCC now, which gives them some television presence in your neck of the woods. I can't remember where it was, but I believe one of the channels was in Washington State. So, you know, that's good news right there. The thing is with that, though, Sinclair has, you know, obviously they want them to be original programming. And I've enjoyed going to the television tapings when they've had them. They do a pretty good job there. The Baltimore crowd is good and has kind of taken it. Those people go to DuVernay's Arena. They've kind of taken it, you know, as their own, which is very nice. Except for it could use, if it is going to be something that we want to crank out there, and it is something that Sinclair is serious about, it is probably time to put a fresh coat on it and to slicken the product up as much as humanly possible. And obviously they're working under a budget, but when you do have that much money, when you're buying television stations and selling them across the country, I think there's some more money you could throw in to actually benefit the guys and benefit the entire product as a whole that you're putting out there and representing.
I wasn't going to do the segue. I wasn't going to talk about this, but you talked about benefiting the guys. And of late, there have been some former UFC stars that have complained about the pay that they make as fighters for UFC. And then that kind of switched over a couple of days ago when Tim Kennedy, who is a UFC fighter who was about to make his UFC debut, decided that he was also going to complain about fighter pay. And I want to get your thoughts on this because to me, I don't know, you chose this job, you know, you chose to be a fighter and you agreed to the contract terms. And I don't know where it's written that that it's an entitlement to be a fighter and be paid enough money to do it full time and not have to have another job. I know that UFC makes a lot of money. This is probably not the best analogy in the world, but McDonald's makes a preposterous amount of money, and you're still only going to make $12 an hour to stand behind the cash register, if that. So I just want to get your thoughts on this because I kind of was a little bit irritated reading a lot of these guys complaining about how much money they're making and how they may have to get other jobs. That's the lot of life of most people in the world. You get a job, and if it doesn't pay you what you feel that you need, then you get another job. You don't complain about it publicly, I don't think. Maybe you know differently, Mike, but your thoughts.
In sports, you can kind of complain publicly because that's, you know, everything is in the media eye. But here's the, if guys want to do something, you know, this isn't going to be a popular, you know, statement for a lot of people, but it's real simple. You finally get together and you unionize. If you're concerned with that, then that's what it is. If it's, you know, if you're serious about it, because otherwise, you're an independent, you're basically out there shopping yourself. This is the fight business, and, you know, you're selling yourself, and your representation is selling you. And it's, you know, it's cutthroat. You have to market yourself. You have to do a lot of things yourself. It's not just about the UFC. To get yourself out there, to get yourself known, to demand more money, you know, to build your name up. And I know we're pressing against break, and it was kind of a broad thing to throw out there, so I guess we'll probably talk a little bit about it when we get back from it, but if guys really are serious about changing the structure of pay in the UFC and everybody says, hey, I'm not getting what I think I should get and the UFC is holding me down, the only thing you can do is get together as a group and push the issue to the UFC and to stand strong. And there's going to be a lot of people that have to take a lot of bullets, and you know, there's going to be some victims in all of this on the way to becoming unionized. And that's a fact. And if, you know, that's just the case of, somebody's going to have to take those bullets, but we can talk about it when we get back from the break, too, because, again, otherwise, it's going to be very difficult for guys to get, quote-unquote, what they think they're worth.
All right, we're going to head to a break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We got daily news updates. We got radio shows. More radio shows than you would even know what to do with. Every week I get somebody emailing me that finally, they said, after all these years, I decided to sign up. And my God, what took me so long? I'll never get through all this audio. And I just think, yeah, I warned you. I warned you years ago you would never get through the audio. And now you've waited even more years. You'll never get through the audio. Your children will never get through the audio. Every radio show we've ever done, we're talking 10 to 15 radio shows a week. Every one we've ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives. That is thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio, thousands of radio shows. If you love this show, you're missing out. You're only going to get 52 of them a year. You could have 52 of them in about, what would that be, Mike? 5 weeks? About 5 weeks, you'd get 52 shows as a subscriber on the website. And actually, on day one, you'd get 10 times that at least because of all of the shows available in the archives. So the cost is $10.99 a month. That's it. Cheaper than, well, I went to dinner at the fish place tonight. Guaranteed. Cheaper than my fish and chips and chowder at the fish place. So check it out. $10.99 a month. You get access to everything. All the new shows, all the old shows, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, Figure Four Weekly. So much stuff up there. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Free samples. If you like what you hear, sign up. And I guarantee that if you like this show, you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Mike, I'll let you wrap up your thoughts on a UFC union, and then I want you to give me your prediction for Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman.
Yeah, it just, if you know, guys are going to talk, but it's like, it's very simple. It's like the website. You know, I can bitch and moan and say that you don't pay enough money. Actually, I'll wait for Vince to do that, but he's going to say, you know, you're not paying me enough money, Brian. And, you know, at some point you just go, okay, you whine enough, then when I get the first chance to cut you, I'm going to cut you. Now, as a group, if we all banded together and said, you know what, no, we're not getting fair wages. We're not getting what we deserve. Look at what is up top. We're the ones putting our lives on the lines.
I'd fire all of you. Sorry.
And you know what? You could. You could, but when you have a union, at least you have some recourse and some backup. And it's interesting that, you know, the John Jones fight against, or him pulling out against the fight against Chael, where it's like, you know, I was not planning for this guy. And that raised a lot of controversy because there were a lot of people saying, you know, of the old mentality of, no, you take the fight, you save the show. There's lots of things that go on for this. That's your job as a fighter. That's what the history of being a fighter has always been about. That's what you do. But then there were a lot of people on the other side who are a lot younger and who look at things a lot differently from a more of a sporting team sports point of view and go, hey, why should he have to take that fight? You know, fighters have rights too. And it's just going to be interesting as fighters are represented by guys who represent athletes in other sports like football, like basketball, and those guys get involved in representing fighters, you know, maybe we see a change towards that. Now, I don't think it's necessarily advantageous to a lot of fighters, especially the ones on top, to be part of a union, because obviously the UFC takes care of you in a lot of different ways. But I'll say this, if guys are going to keep popping up and saying this and saying it over and over, then really their only true recourse is to start a union and is to go after the UFC that way and try to band together and say, look, at the very least, the minimums that guys get should be much higher. Now, with that said, too, there is an idea in the general public that UFC, that boxers on the undercards of fights, especially major fights like pay-per-views, you know, make money. That's not the case. There are guys who make as little as $100, you know, $500, that fight on the openings of pay-per-views where guys are getting paid $4, $5, $6, $10, $20, $25 million. Just imagine what Mayweather and Canelo are going to get out of their fight in September. And there's a thought that there's boxers, you know, up and down the card, get some of that money. That's not true. Guys who are on the undercard of the UFC, dollar for dollar, get paid a lot more than most of those club fighters who open up cards and most of the young fighters who open up cards on pay-per-views. So I think that things are a little skewed as far as the idea of what guys are supposed to get paid on these shows. But again, to me, the only thing that the guys can do in the UFC or guys can do in mixed martial arts is band together and at least get better minimums and better quote-unquote treatment that they think that they deserve out of those deals.
All right, Anderson Silva.
I believe what everybody says about Chris Weidman. I like him a lot, too. I just, again, I haven't seen him in sparring. I haven't seen him in training, and that's where a lot of the word that Chris Weidman can beat Anderson Silva is coming out of. It's guys like that who have rolled with him. It's guys like that who have wrestled him, who believe he can do what Chael Sonnen did to Anderson Silva, except do it to another level and actually beat him. I can trust those guys. I believe in those guys. But as far as me putting money down on the deal, until somebody beats Anderson Silva and figures him out, you know, again, you know, Anderson Silva's last loss was against Rio Chonin. That was by fluke when Chonin rolled through him on a pride show and actually scissored him. So, yeah, I think he had a disqualification loss in there, too, at a Rumble on the Rock. You take those two out. I mean, when was the last time Anderson Silva truly was just outclassed and beat? You know, it hadn't happened. Obviously, the first Sonnen fight, he was up until the fifth round. But I'm sorry, as much as I believe in Chris Weidman and he's going to be around for a long, long time, until Silva actually gets beat, I'm not going to believe it.
Silva is the odds opened at, I believe, -208, Silva +172, Chris Weidman, and now -214 for Silva and +220 for Weidman. So that seems to be Anderson Silva is the heavy favorite. Some places it's pretty heavy, -333 here, +220. Looking like, I don't know if this has changed dramatically in some places, but certainly he is now a pretty heavy favorite all across the board. So we'll see what happens, everybody. I am not putting my money on anyone other than Anderson Silva, as noted by Mike, until he loses. Man, the history of MMA is littered with the bodies of guys that, man, they're great in practice. You got to go in and fight outside of practice. You got to get in there and compete. It's a different world. It's a different game. So my money is on Anderson Silva. Now, we got to talk about Raw very quickly. A lot of stuff.
By the way, the last time he was flat out clearly beaten in what couldn't be considered somewhat of a fluke, because, again, if you see that Chonin fight, it was somewhat of a fluke. It's June 2003 when he was submitted by Daju Takase, which is amazing in hindsight at Pride 26. But, yeah, that was the last time Anderson Silva. It's been a decade.
Been a long time. Now, Daniel Bryan on Raw. A lot of talk over the past couple of days over an interview that Shawn Michaels did. And Shawn was talking to Vince. And Vince was talking about a guy that he didn't see money in. And this led to a lot of speculation because Sean wouldn't say who it was. Dave Meltzer on Observer Radio said that he had talked to people who said that it was Daniel Bryan. And this led, of course, to a lot of people talking more about this, which then led to Shawn Michaels claiming on another interview that he was not talking about Daniel Bryan. Although I can tell you there are other people in WWE who do, in fact, believe he was talking about Daniel Bryan. At the end of the day, Mike, first off, do you believe that Daniel Bryan is going to get the WWE title match at SummerSlam?
Yes. Yes, I do, actually.
I do as well. Now, one important point, whether Vince was talking about Daniel Bryan or not, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that he was. Okay? Shawn Michaels has denied this, but let's just say that he was. At the end of the day, as I have mentioned on a couple of different shows and interviews, at the end of the day, Vince McMahon will listen to his inner circle. And that's how Rey Mysterio got the WWE title. Vince McMahon did not want to put the title on Rey, but he was talked into it. And granted, he did then proceed to let the creative team know perpetually that, you know, this ain't going to last forever. You know that... We're taking this title off him soon. You know, this is short term, blah, blah. But he did put the belt on him. So I know that Triple H loves Daniel Bryan. I know that everybody in the company loves Daniel Bryan. And honest to God, Vince McMahon, even let's just say that in the Shawn Michaels story, Vince was talking about Daniel Bryan, which again, Shawn Michaels denies, but let's just say that he was. Vince never said he didn't like this person. Vince never said he didn't think this person was talented. All Vince said, according to Shawn Michaels, was that he did not see money in this guy. So none of this, if this is the case, none of this has anything necessarily to do with Vince McMahon not liking Daniel Bryan. If it was Daniel Bryan that he was talking about, that's no guarantee he's not getting a championship match. Or even if he does get a championship match at SummerSlam, doesn't even mean he's guaranteed to lose. And most importantly, there is a Total Divas show that's coming up. Congratulations to Natalia and Tyson Kidd, by the way, just got married last night, which was filmed for Total Divas. Daniel Bryan is all over the Total Divas show. So the feeling is that he is pretty much bulletproof through SummerSlam. So I think there was a story this week that got blown way out of proportion. And I think at the end of the day, it may be much ado about nothing. But that is the Daniel Bryan story. And anything you'd like to add, Mike?
No, I agree with you. I think he is bulletproof there. I mean, he was on Saturday Morning Slam. He could do the little kid stuff. You know, he's, again, a legitimate tough guy in the fact that gets his hands on you. You know, you can say what you want about Daniel Bryan and the comedy that he's doing. He could legitimately hurt you. Again, the Total Divas show that he's got. I mean, yeah, it's even if that wasn't the guy he's talking about, it doesn't matter. I'm sure there. Vince says that about a lot of people. I'm not sure how much money he sees per se in Curtis Axel. I don't know how much he sees in Kofi Kingston. It doesn't really matter. You know the guys that Vince likes. History has dictated that. But that, again, doesn't mean that, you know, Daniel Bryan hasn't gotten an opportunity. He has, and yes, they've tried to mess with him, but he's also overcome a lot of that stuff, too. So it doesn't really matter. Vince, usually, at the end of the day, they end up tending to do, in a lot of ways, what's best for business, or at least give it a shot to see how it succeeds. And again, they've had issues with how they've booked guys, and they haven't booked a lot of guys in the best of ways or anything like that. But I think Daniel Bryan is just he and CM Punk have just been those unsinkable forces in that company that no matter what they do, they're going to be lingering around in the top of the mix for quite some time.
Give some quick notes on the deaths of Matt Bourne and Jackie Fargo.
Yeah, it's Jackie Fargo. I think we talked a little bit about it last week. Has been sick for quite some time and passed away. And it's, you know, Jerry Lawler was able to mention it for a moment this past week on Raw. And just a huge influence in that part of the country. One of Tennessee's absolute biggest stars of all time, and a heavy influence to anyone that ever saw him. Obviously, to Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, the Fabulous Ones, the Fantastics, and that the tree that came off of there, it all goes back to the planting of Jackie Fargo. And Matt Bourne, unfortunately, you know, appeared on the first WrestleMania, probably this generation, best known as the original Doink the Clown, to which he would still go around and do, I believe, on the independent scene every once in a while. But a longtime great wrestler, part of the Rat Pack in Mid-South, a legend in the Pacific Northwest, son of a legendary father, and best wishes go out to their families and their friends.
Back in a moment, Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, and before we go here today, Mike, the WWE, the old NXT, the old developmental, it's all being torn down. And they are moving into the new WWE Performance Training Center. I believe the opening day is July 11th. But anyway, is this the beginning, do you feel, of a new era, a renaissance of the WWE developmental program, or do you believe that it'll remain the old developmental program, just dressed up in a nice, pretty package?
You know, there's probably going to be too many remnants of the old style that sticks around, at least until some people are gone and out of that company, but it's been said for a long time that Hunter has wanted to really make it a lot different. Make it like an NFL combine system. Make it like a finishing school. Have a lot going on. Utilize the trainers better at their disposal. I mean, when you have your guys like Dusty Rhodes and Steve Kern and Ricky Steamboat, and there's, you know, tons of other guys out there, you know, much less the ones that are already working for the company in some capacity, your William Regals, all those sorts of guys. You have those guys at your disposal. It's to me, you got to use them better. My only issue that when it comes down to the training center, which sounds fantastic and how they're going to recruit guys, I think actually is pretty awesome, and it ends up being a finishing school for a lot of the guys who have been in Ring of Honor in Japan or in Europe or something like that. I think there's great possibilities here. I think what they do need to do, though, is they got to set up satellite locations throughout the country so they guys can go to Los Angeles, you know, say like an NWA Hollywood type thing and work there for a little bit. And just, you know, be more comfortable on camera, go to Chicago, have little satellites pop up, because I think that's needed, too, for guys just to go out and spread their wings and wrestle in front of crowds that they don't know, where it's not going to affect them, you know, down the line. I just think that kind of experience actually helps, and hopefully that's something they can do in expanding it out.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank Mike, as always. I want to thank all the folks at Sports Byline USA. Thank all of you for listening. Back later on tonight with Dave Meltzer at WrestlingObserver.com, brand new radio show, so make sure you check that out, everybody. And we are out of here. Sports Byline USA, Wrestling Observer Live. We'll talk to you again next week.